Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, today on Lulz, we have a young gun, a DFS pro who keeps a low profile that reached out to us and said, hey, I want to come chop it up on Lulz, talk about battling the other high stakes pros. So we're going to meet that individual here shortly. And also, I need to clear my name with this toasted bullshit. Everyone thinks I'm peeping Pete looking at their profiles. This is ridiculous.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What? Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Brian, it was an innocent time yesterday afternoon. I got a DM from you and you're like, hey, this toasted stuff is pretty interesting. Had not even logged on to Twitter yet. I was just like, oh yeah, this seems like one of those things. Little did I know that I would become the epicenter of this horrible app, this horrible trend. I don't know why, Brian, but I appear on everyone's top 10 for toasted, which shows who views your Twitter profile the most. And now we got people out there like Empire Maker calling me Peepin' Pete. And now I have to clear my good name.
That was hilarious. You have to admit, it was pretty damn funny.
I mean, Justin McMahon, I haven't looked at that guy's profile page since he probably came on Lulz. And what was that, like a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Davis was on there a lot, too.
Oh, this is. I mean,
he wasn't happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, the funniest one to me, I don't know, Justin Herzig was top on CSU Rams wife Ashley's Twitter page. And that's the one you don't want to be on. It's like, have you been creeping on CSU's wife this whole time?
Yeah, he had a whole press release about how toasted is completely fabricated. Like, oh, I bet you think it is, don't you?
Well, this is why I'm so torn, because part of me wants to be like, this is complete bullshit. I've never looked at this page. In fact, Justin, I had to tell him I haven't muted. That's how much I haven't looked at his page. But then I see Justin's thing and I'm like, no, this checks out, dude.
In some cases, it's deadly accurate. In others, it's way off.
It's like you with DFS, right? If you win, right, it's skill. If someone else wins, it's luck.
Oh, yeah. Luck. Clearly.
Yeah. So like, and you know, this has just gotten out of control now. You know, I'll go to my page, these are just blatant Photoshops. People now trying to act like I'm the only one who views their profile page. Kitchen is calling me Profile Petey. Empire Maker called me Peepin' Pete, which now Sacrilegious says has a good ring to it. And so I did have to make this press release last night myself. How am I first on Everyone's Toasted? Get over yourselves. I've never read one of your shitty tweets. A lot of people don't believe me on that. But Brian, I thought this was going to be a fun thing, but I hate this app. I hate it.
Turns out it wasn't that fun for you. I called a Davis Simpec.
Yeah. What were the other funniest ones you saw within the DFS space?
Oh, God. I don't know if there was anything. It's just the piling on of you. EM2 was in a lot of them, too, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I saw that was pretty funny.
Yeah, Sammy Reed, I like Sammy. I listen to his podcast. I'll be completely honest, Sammy. I never click on your fucking Twitter feed, man. I just get you in my ears with your podcast. How am I number one on Sammy's?
I don't know. Levitan was in a lot too. So it's clearly done by some algorithm somehow. And yeah. they're engagement farming. And they filter it towards people with a lot of followers and activity. It's completely fake. It's complete bullshit. Remember when I first DM'd you this, that we should do a bit with this? We already were thinking about Photoshopping. You know, like, yeah, you could do so many funny ones, you know, like put like Elon and Barack Obama following you, or Just do a DFS related.
All right, Justin, right now, live on air, I'm going to unmute you so I could see this awful strig here. I just have no idea how I would be Justin's number CSU Ram.
I mean, yours makes some sense. I still think it's all fake, but
yeah, I hope so.
Why is Laffy creeping up on J-Max? It makes some sense because you do multiple shows, and especially this one where you bring these people on and you have to like click their name to get their info for the show and copy paste. And we do a lot of like, we go to Hoop's account, we go to Big T's account, you know, just the last couple
for
of
journalistic
shows.
Purposes.
For journalistic purposes. So like, I guess it's possible. I mean, cause if it was like just one, like one click is all it takes.
One click is all it takes. I mean, that's what's so insidious about this is like, I think everyone collectively agrees this algorithm is completely busto, but there's just enough of directional accuracy, just a kernel of truth that it plants the seed that maybe this dude is just creeping nonstop on this page.
Oh yeah. Some other funny ones was, Big T having Levitan not follow him, but be his number five. The golf hot chick page, whatever. Justin Thomas, who's married, was her third or fourth.
Well, the not following thing actually checks out, right? Because if you aren't following someone and you're still kind of curious and obsessed about them, the only way to go see their tweets is to manually go do it because you're never going to see it in the feed. So it actually makes it seem more likely to me that they would appear on this list if you don't follow them.
Sure. Right. I can understand someone clicking on Paige's account for obvious reasons to look at her, but yes. Why would you click on anyone else's account? I don't know. It's very rare that I'll read someone's tweet, even like it, you know, and then let's go into their account and see everything else they're saying. It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, I would say the thing that's probably most common for me these days is because like the Twitter home app and whatever the algo is so fucking busted too, just on like Twitter's end, that I'll sometimes like see a tweet from someone and be like, holy shit, I forgot about that person, or I haven't seen a tweet for them in like what feels like 4 months. And then I'll like scroll on their profile and be like, oh yeah, I don't remember seeing this. Oh, didn't know that you had a kid. Didn't know that you changed sites. Like you learn all of this stuff because you catch up on it. But this implication that I'm constantly, that I have basically Toasted wants you to think that I have 1,000 tabs open for every personality at DFS. And once every hour I do a refresh to see what they're up to.
It got out of hand. It got out of hand.
I like this galaxy brain theory from Christopher here. Maybe it's backwards and it's who viewed you the most, I think maybe is what he means. I could see that.
I guess. Yeah. There's clearly some algo going on where your interactions with somebody, maybe your mentions, your likes, it just so happens that it's always guys who have like 20,000 or plus more followers. Oh, yeah. So like, you know, Davis has whatever, 50,000, Levitan is like over 100,000. So they want them to be in there so that it draws more attention to the stupid Toasted app. It's completely fake. It's completely fake.
I mean, let's call a spade a spade. We all got engagement farmed hard on this. I mean, the viral marketing that this app was able to do, they got me, you know, and as a pro engagement farmer myself, I generally pride myself on not falling for these traps, but they got us, Brian.
Yeah. I feel partially responsible for that getting into the DFS community.
Where did you find this? This seems like some random Reddit thing you're looking at.
Random Twitter. Just people are doing it. I'm like, okay, it's, and then I saw EM2 was my number one. I'm like, this is a slam dunk. This will clearly upset him. So I have to post it.
And he did try to clear his name too, and saying he'd never been to your page. I believe
he got screwed more than, no, you got screwed pretty bad just because yours popped up so many times. But he was the first one that I posted, the first one, so no one knew it was fake yet. So like, yeah. He's like, wait, guys, I can't, you know, he has no defense.
It's so true. All right. I teased this at the top of the show. Our guest is here. I am going to bring in Ryan Durante. Did I pronounce your last name correctly, Ryan?
Yeah. What's going on, Pete? Hey, Ryan. How are you?
Durante or Durante?
Durante.
Durante. Yeah. Okay.
And so you had reached out to me a couple weeks ago about coming on the show. So I assume people in the DFS community would know you maybe more by your username, which is rdurantecp.
Yeah. And then mine on FanDuel is the Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. And when you had sent me an email, you had said, you know, I quit working in real estate as a 25-year-old to play DFS full time. And that you had been still doing some corporate jobs here and there. And then you ended up backing out initially saying like, actually, I don't think this is going to fly with my day job. I was like, okay, we'll punt the show. And then you reach out to me again and say, wait, now I left my corporate job. Let's go. Let's do this. Did I get that timeline correct?
Yeah, no, you did. I felt bad letting you down. I just had to do something about it. I was working in finance and they said it was a conflict of interest with media. They didn't want the name of the company to come up because it was gambling related. So I had to decline doing it. But yeah, we're here now. So no problem anymore.
Did you tell them that this show does a lot for gambling awareness? It's a big issue of ours.
No, you know, to be honest, I just got so burnt out of corporate jobs. I think this was my last one. I have been struggling to want to work with DFS going on. And I was kind of grinding for a few years and just like struggling to pay my rent with it. And then this past year, I just like finally kind of broke through. And that was kind of my reason I wanted to come on the show. I listened to this podcast like every week, like my first 2 years, just like really, I feel like learned kind of a lot just hearing from like the guys like Nerdy, Ricky, Petty Theft in particular, because I'm pretty high in basketball. And I just like have felt like such a good sense of gratitude just like having these kind of resources while I haven't really known anybody, or like before I went to any live events, I really didn't know a single person in this industry. So yeah, that was just kind of my reason for wanting to come on the show. And I got some fun party stories with like FanDuel and all that. So I thought it'd be a good time.
I do want to clarify, because this was my inclination too. You did specifically quit your job, not because of any monetary reasons or whatever. It was because you said, look, it's either you get me on lulls or you don't get me at all. And you called their bluff. Yeah. Is that how it went down?
Yeah, pretty much. I told him Pete's the man. And if you're going to keep me from my guy, I got to go.
There you go. So Brian, when you hear Ryan's story, he sounds to me a lot about the type of viewers that you're always worried about, who pick up enough breadcrumbs along the way, go all in on DFS, and that enough has been leaked that turns these guys into your competitors in the high stakes DFS ecosystem. Do you feel threatened by Ryan?
I do. I feel very threatened, emasculated. I noticed he didn't say my name in any of the congratulations and thanks there, by the way. So
wow. There you go. Do you want
like with Ryan, hate and fear?
Yeah, Ryan, normally we do this off air, but Brian kind of has every guest kind of kiss the ring when they come on. He kind of holds his hand out. Okay. And yeah. So if you could do that, he'll be a lot more jovial for the rest
of
the stream.
You're ranked much higher than me, so kiss the ring.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we're like, because you said that you quit working in real estate at 25 to play DFS full time, but then at some point you went back to working. So like, how did that all work as far as like when you were actually like deriving the majority of your income from DFS?
Yeah, to be honest, only over the last 8 months. So my first 2 years, I started playing basketball in 2020 during COVID time. And I had some initial really good success. I was strictly playing FanDuel because I was able to kind of get a deal with them. I think they kind of care more about new customer acquisition relative to DraftKings. And so I was able to kind of get started with them. They were giving me some tickets. I was kind of able to like scale a little bit more than my actual bankroll because of their help. And I was playing the baller every night, 1650. I won like 50K a couple times, like kind of got to around like 100K in profit. And then baseball season came around and I had no idea what I was doing. I lost like 90% of my profit trying to expand my success from basketball the following like 4 months. Kind of had like a negative season in football and was like basically like slightly red my first year. And I kind of told myself, like, I'll give it 2 years. I was just like absolutely obsessed with fantasy sports growing up. It was always a dream I wanted to do. And I had kind of budgeted to expect to lose a little bit my first year. So I kept going. And my second year was kind of more of the same. Like, I cut out baseball because I realized it wasn't a good sport for me. Football, I teetered back on a lot. And then I really wasn't like, I still was barely paying my rent with it. And so I added a day job because I was going to give myself like 6 more months. And as I was like, you know what, I should take on a job, start to scale that up. I was in sales at the time. And then that way, if it ends up going bad, by the time I'm done with my 2 years in DFS, my sales job has already started to scale. It's kind of just like a hedge. And I just like finally had like a really killer season. And to the point where like, I just don't really have to think about money for a while. And I never thought I was going to get there. And I changed up a lot of my strategies and whatnot, but I'll kind of let you go from there. I'd just give you an idea.
What sport did you kill, or multiple sports?
Basketball primarily this year. And then football, to a little slightly less degree, but basketball primarily.
And I know you had a couple big wins, 100,000 win, 250,000 win, but it sounds like you're also playing some of the nosebleeds that you've been battling in the 10K head-to-heads, the three-mans and stuff. Like, where are you seeing most of your ROI?
Yeah, GPPs were really strong this year. I think I returned like close to a 50% ROI on those. I don't MME, and I'd say that's the one thing where I would kind of consider myself more of a semi-pro than a pro. Like, I don't have these built out algorithms or models. I don't have anything proprietary. I'm not really like pushing volume. I really prefer single entry, and I've been playing a lot of like 10K, three mans, head to heads, kind of things like that. So that's kind of been like off the top a little, just a little bit extra, but, I did hit some GPPs this year, which was great. So
with a single bullet.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to replicate this, but 2 years in a row on DraftKings, I've won a 600 person tournament with one lineup. I did it twice actually this year, and so I kind of realized like if I can do that there, I should probably be playing head to heads, three mans, like all of that. Now that I kind of have the bankroll, and so far it's been working out pretty well.
600 man, you said 600 man. You won with a single entry. Mm-hmm. That's doable. That's doable. I thought you were winning the 30,000 entries with one. That's pretty difficult, even if you're very, very good.
So what do you attribute specifically your success to? Are you like a petty theft information hound, where you just are accumulating more knowledge than your competitors? Is it your system, your process? Like what's your secret sauce, even if you're just saying it in kind of a more general sense?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to get so many requests to play 10K head-to-heads after I say this, but we'll go with it. I basically, like, every day I'll just, like, take a walk for, like, 2 to 3 hours, and I'll just, like, manually go through every single combination of players. Like, I outsource my data. I think, like, I could spend 2 to 3 years trying to perfect a model, but essentially, like, it's going to be so similar to what's out there already because data is so abundantly available. Like, I think just taking that and having like 80% of my work done for the day already, and then modifying it from there, like 20% on the back end. Once I have that, like, I basically just spend like 3 to 4 hours a day just going through every combination of like, I'll start at this position and put this player in, and then go 7 spots, then go 6 spots, then go 5 spots. Like, I don't think there's really any science to it. It's just much more of like a feel based. And then I just watch like every game. So like, I think data without context is kind of pointless. Like, you have to really understand player profiles. You have to really understand correlation, but like seeing it in person and then seeing like the runs of it. So I really am just a field based player, with, you know, a basic sense of statistics and whatnot, but I don't really think there's anything like proprietary about what I do.
Who do you outsource? Who do you use? Why don't you shout out these wonderful companies that made you so wealthy?
Yeah, to be honest, I do use Stochastic. I don't think I've given up any edge by saying that. I think they're probably the best. And then I have one or two other sources that I'll kind of confirm with. And then I kind of do my own modifications from there. I think as good as Stochastic is, I've become much less reliant on it as I've kind of progressed, because once you really start to study the game and understand like different contexts, you kind of realize a mean projection only gets you so far. There's a lot more to it. It's much more based on like what the market's doing on a nightly basis and how you're playing against it.
Do you make one lineup and that's it? You enter it in the three mans, you enter it in the 600 man.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I'm a one track mind kind of person. I've 20, like the night I won the 888 for 250, I did 20 lineups, but I locked two guys. And I think I just like very much have the mentality of, I think this is the right path, so I'm going to take it. And then I'll allow some diversification from there. But I think I always have the mindset of like, I think this is going to be in the winning lineup. I'll go from there. And then like, because you can just get buried from a guy putting up 10 to 12X if there's just like this crazy value. And if there's a reason to get off of it, I will. I'll take an aggressive stance. But I think more times than not, like, you just got to know long term what you're trying to do. If you're trying to play contrarian always or not, I think there's a little rhyme and rhythm to like what you're doing long term.
Does one of your anonymous projection sources rhyme with the word sun cure?
No.
Okay. I just had to ask. You do kind of sound like the way you described some of your lineup building process reminds me of, you know, because I talked to JM DeWin all NFL season long, and he really focuses on like the hand building combos of like working through pairs, constantly getting to a dead end of like trying to put these puzzle pieces together and just reshuffling, starting over. It almost seemed like what you were describing as like a very intensive hand building process until you find the pieces that fit together in a way that's satisfying to you.
Yeah, it feels like I'm solving an equation. And honestly, I think that's why I like the game so much. Like, I probably wouldn't watch basketball very much if it weren't for this game. I just really like trying to solve the puzzle. It's like, it's like playing Nintendo as a kid. You're just like, you're constantly trying to like, beat something or like
complete like Tetris? Task.
Yeah, exactly.
So Qbert's kind of following up on that. He's saying, so what do you obtain from watching all the basketball that you don't get from the stats, minutes, projections, coach rotations, et cetera, like what Petty does? Yeah, like what are the kind of things that get lost in the numbers that you're able to pick up on with your eyes?
Yeah, like I think a lot of guys just fall into statistics on a nightly basis. And if they're not in a scenario to easily like fall into that, like let's take like Bam Adebayo, for example. I like don't think he's that good of a player in reality. I think oftentimes he has these random spike games, but like if his mid-range shot just goes one night because he's just kind of bricks a lot of the time. Like, yeah, he like always grades out from a mean projection well, but like he just oftentimes doesn't really get there. And like his player profile is like mid-range game. But if you have a defender on him and they lock him down in the mid-range, like he can't shoot the three. He's really kind of fragile with the ball. He like, yeah, he can fall into like 12 rebounds, but like if he doesn't run strong, he could easily just like be a letdown spot when the market's like 50% on him for the night. That's just kind of a recent thought. I played Bam last night. I'm just bitter, but I don't know. There's just like, there's certain guys that like, yeah, they get there sometimes when they're chalk, but like there's so much justification to get off of them and to get a completely different build by paying down versus paying up. Does that kind of make
He's a hand builder, Pete.
He's a, I appreciate it. You got the calluses like me, just far more success. Where on the chess is okay 80 hour spectrum are you of how much time are you putting in a week to playing full time?
Basketball, honestly, I only spend about 2 hours a day. Like I'll like do my hand lineup, like I'll go through the process 2 hours and then I'll sit down like an hour and a half before. So 3.5 and then I watch the games. I guess if you count watching, like a full 8, but I would say like work wise, I don't overcomplicate it. I think it's like a 2 to 4 hour process.
Gotcha. And when you, like, if you're reviewing other top players, let's say NBA lineups, and because it does seem like you, you know, at least I always hear, you know, this is so efficient, you know, the projections are so good. It's really hard to separate yourself. Like, what makes your overall lineups different? Like, when people were to look at yours, would they be like, oh man, this is a different angle than someone who is just, you know, crunching optimize on an optimizer?
Yeah, I think like when I crunch and I like look at like the optimal for a night, like I just think I'm consistently trying to find ways to get off of that. And like I think it was like a few weeks ago, Caris LeVert was chalk because like Jared Allen was going to sit and his rates weren't going to change at all. Like Donovan Mitchell still on the court, same with like all the other guys, like their center rotation is a little different. I like instantly am thinking to myself like, okay, I'm not going that route. I know like 50 to 70% of guys are going to play him on like a 6 to 8 game slate. Like I'm just instantly going to get off of him because I think he's going to worst case get 6x and I can find that elsewhere. So like, I think it's just like my thought process on that. I don't feel like I'm really giving up edge because it's just kind of a feel off of like what's chalk, what's not, but you can tell like the market gets it wrong a lot of nights on just a couple of guys, or like there are guys that still hit value, but they don't exceed it by any crazy amount, and just by simply getting to a different combination you can solve the equation a different way. So I kind of think like that, which is counterintuitive to like cash and three mans, but I still think it's applicable in some sense.
How much you getting down on like a average Wednesday or something during the regular season?
It's changed a lot. So I was only spending a couple thousand a night for the first like 2 years, and then I won like 100k, 250k, and so that kind of boosted my role. And I kind of stagger what I do. Like if I'm doing well enough, I'll start to play more of the live finals qualifiers. I'll start to play more big stakes, head to heads, three mans. And so fortunately, like I just had a crazy year. Like I just really kept winning GPPs and I started to win 10K. So I kind of met the point where I'm spending like 20 to 25K now a night. But I will probably reset that at the end of the year. Like I'm basically done for the year now until September comes around for football. So I'm probably going to reevaluate, divest some of my money, and then probably start back down in like probably around the 5K range. If I have another good year, stagger it up again.
So are you, you mentioned, you know, building this one lineup that you'll use in these tournaments, but then also playing these high stakes head-to-heads and three-mans. Are you using the same lineup or do you have a different lineup for your head-to-heads and stuff?
No, I just use one lineup.
And is that then why you think you've had success? Because obviously you're building a lineup that's going to be unique, that could win a bigger field, but then you're saying, hey, these guys are going to be relying heavily on the projections. They're going to have close to the chalk lineup. And because I'm approaching it from like a completely different set, that's kind of giving you an advantage in those contests.
I would say so. I think the burden's on me to outperform the data, and long-term I'm curious to see if I'm capable of doing that. So far I have been, but, this is only my first year of like, you know, a major success. It could honestly swing back just in trying to stay humble. But to be honest, yeah, it's allowed me to do some things that I can tell my opponents aren't like I've played three mans before. I think three of the last 10 that I've done at the 10K level, and not to name names or anything, not to make anything personal. I'm playing a 1v1 to 3X my money because the guys are playing the same exact math. Like I would sign up to take that every single day because I only have to beat one lineup and I get the additional return. I'm basically playing a head to head for 3X.
So you're saying the two other guys are playing the same lineup and you're playing a 1v1 off of the same lineup?
Yeah. Yeah. Not a 1v1 off that lineup. I'm just saying, like, I'm basically playing a head-to-head in three mans on a handful of nights because two of the three guys are playing the same lineup and then I'm playing a different lineup. And so that's just like,
and tell me I'm wrong, I don't play this game, but as I understand it, these guys are probably playing the best projected lineups in these contests. So you are sacrificing most likely projected points playing a different lineup than them, right?
Agree. Yeah.
But you're saying,
unless he thinks he's right and the market's wrong.
And that's to my point. Like, I on occasion will play a similar lineup or the same lineup, but I just think there's enough nights where the market is, I think because we're so data focused now in DFS, there's actually an edge to be had in like trying to find contrarian views within context of game scripts and game flows. And like previously when DFS was so not statistically based and like feel based as it first started out, all the edge was in statistics. Now, you know that that's there. The average player like me can come along and pick up the game because there's good enough, you know, projections. I think there's edge in the qualitative aspect of the game now.
You mentioned, I mean, playing in the three mans, obviously a huge talking point with that over the years has been how mm-hmm. ripe those are for collusion. Lots of people coming on the show talking about Mock Lovin, other people potentially cheating there. How do you think about that of like, hey, I might not be getting it in good. Clearly that doesn't seem to be a huge concern to you.
I kind of know the guys now, at least from a distance of like who they are and what they're doing. And truthfully, my first year, I actually did play Mock and SRN. I played them like six times on FanDuel. I checked just to have some sort of data to report here. I was doing the same thing. I wasn't playing, you know, optimal based lineups. I actually ended up doing fine. I won two and I chopped one and then I lost like two in a row. So I stopped. But I returned like less than a unit profit. But yeah, I mean, I had no idea that was going on when I first started doing it. And that is somewhat of a concern, but I don't think Chipotle Addict or Yoda or any of those guys are really, I think they're too big to fail. And I don't think they have any reason to want to play, to cheat, or from what I've gauged from people I've met and what I've learned, you know, I think there's maybe one name that I have to worry about, but yeah.
What name? Yeah. So why don't you save the Mock? People? Why don't you help people out?
Look, I'll
so they don't get cheated.
Before I get anything personal, it's my fault. It's my responsibility for getting into a market that I wasn't aware of the dynamics, especially when it was somewhat well known. I think, in all honesty, the only person that's going to play in those are guys like me that are coming up for the first time that don't fully know and aren't super educated on, you know, different dynamics. I think it's pretty damn pathetic for that to be your angle if that's how you want to make money. That being said, that's on me for getting into a market like that. So I'll leave it at that. I think we all know who it is. But
so it's Travis Petty. Okay. All right.
Well, can I ask why are you afraid to say Mock Lovin? I mean, that's been kind of like the worst kept secret in.
Oh, he's saying it's somebody else. He's saying it's somebody else.
It's Mock and SRN. I know that. Okay. Like, but I get to wake up and make fantasy sports lineups. Like, I'm a happy kid. I don't. It's in the rearview mirror. It is what it is.
Like, you can be happy and call out cheating too. There's no
diagnosis. That's true.
Have one or the other here.
No, that's true. I'm trying to take the high road on it, but yeah, no, I mean, I got cheated by Mock. It didn't cost me money, fortunately, but it is what it is.
Okay. Well, there you go. Shots fired. Yeah. Holy shit. I can't believe you said that live on air. No, I'm kidding.
What do you,
I'm saving the drama for the house, Pete. I've been hearing you talk this up. I want to get into a drafting house. I think that'd be so much fun.
Brian and I always talk about it, and you had mentioned one of the things you had said is like, hey, I'm younger than a lot of this kind of established cohort of pros that everyone knows. And one of the things we always talk about the DFS house doing more content is that, like, hey, a lot of these guys have families, a lot of them can't like afford to go do this. It sounds like you are Are you single? Are you mobile? Like, would you be able to go live in a DFS house for 3 months and shoot a reality TV show?
I just quit my corporate job, baby. I can do whatever I want.
I was going to say the paintings above, not saying you don't have taste, but that looked like a man who's domesticated.
I got out of the city. I came to my mother's house for the interview.
Okay. There it is. There it is. That's a mother's touch right there. Yeah. Otherwise your background looks like Brian's. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. No, I very much would. I mean, I think that would be something of interest. I'm very much a single guy. I'm 27. I definitely got into DFS too because I saw like all of these, you know, the whole industry. It's people early 30s to late 30s. They have kids, families, serious relationships. Like, I thought just by being able to watch every game every night, spending a couple hours on my phone, going through every combination, like I thought there was an edge to be had there. And boy, was I wrong that it would just be like somewhat easy to just show up my first year and start winning through sheer effort. Like, I think there's so much time to like figure out if your process is right, if the decisions you're making are panning out, like how you're playing the game. Like experience in this, honestly, I have realized is like very, very crucial, and it just takes time.
I guess one thing, if I was watching this show and I had seen all these episodes, the thought I would be having is like, all right, we've seen guests like Chess Is Okay and Travis Petty who put in a shit ton of time, and it's like this nuance in the context that gives them their edge. And then we see people like Brian and Nerdy Tenor who press a button and it all spits out. It seems like you're almost having your cake and eating it too, because you're saying like you are picking up on things that maybe the quants aren't, but then you say you're also not necessarily spending that much time on it. It sounds like the dream to be successful at DFS, have an edge on people while also not having to devote 80 hours a week to it.
Yeah. And I don't know if it'll last, in all honesty. And I'm sure a lot of people think it probably won't, but like, I never thought I was going to make $750,000 playing a game for over 7 months. Like, I don't think it's realistic for that ever to happen again, but I mean, I spend 2 to 3 hours a day just going through this. I love going through the process of it. I wake up in the morning, I go to the gym, I take a walk, I get a coffee. Like, I go play golf with my dad once a week, like when I'm not at my corporate job. Like, it really is kind of the dream. That's kind of why I was attracted to it. And I think like I'm mentally like constantly thinking about like combinations and this and that. And like, my brain is kind of always firing on it in some way, but yeah, I am kind of eating the cake right now. It's only a couple hours a day. And it, like, if you have a good run too, you can always just take off a week. You're probably going to lose anyways. Like, I think my cash rate's like 30% this year, which I think is pretty high relative to what my historical is. But like, if I'm going to lose 7 to 8 nights a week anyways, and I have a great run, I'll just take off a couple days. Odds are I'm saving myself money.
Do you, are you a content hound? Are you listening to a ton of the shows to kind of try to get a feel for what the field is doing? Because it sounds like you are taking kind of an exploitative angle with some of your play. Is that part of your strategy?
Yeah, I think I have like a couple different sources that I check on a day-to-day basis just to see where people are at and like what's projected. And then I think, again, you kind of get a good understanding of certain context of when somebody's over projected for ownership. Like, I think the whole late swapping with NBA, once you get better value on the table, you know, some guys are going to get squeezed, and it's hard to understand sometimes when, but when you know that a position is really tough one night, and again, kind of why I'm going through the combinations on a daily basis so much, like it's pretty easy to just tell like, okay, the small forward value is going to get squeezed, or this value is going to get squeezed here. So that kind of gives you, if you know that, it gives you an edge or an angle to understanding like the optimal build and the, like where people are going to go later on in the night.
All right, Brian, you're being pretty quiet over there. If I had to guess, Brian, I feel like you smell like a little bit of bullshit. Are you buying all this? Where are you at on Ryan's story here of success?
I'm just fuming right now, Peter. No. I mean, it seems like you probably need a little bigger sample size, in like my opinion, than to like quit your job. Although the show is very important, so I do support you quitting your job to come on here.
I'm just over the corporate world, but yeah.
And if you got a lot of it from single entry, some like, you know, 30 plus man, there's a lot of variance. How much were you betting when you first, your first 2 years, you said like $2,000, how much money did you have to spend? What was your role?
I would say just under $200,000.
How did you get that?
I was a real estate agent in San Francisco on the incline of the rental market. I was working like 7 days a week, just leasing an apartment like pretty much every other day.
So was you like your personal net worth was your role?
Yeah, I set aside like, I'd say like 30, 40K. I was living really cheap. And yeah, I figured if I swung down like 100K, I'd probably reevaluate, which yeah. I did swing down a little bit for a little while. But yeah, it never got to the point where like I was worried. I don't know. I've always lived my life like I'm going to be dead in 50 years with nothing to say about it. Like, I don't care. Like if I do something and it's like socially not like looked at highly, like as long as I think I'm making a smart, calculated decision, I'll go ahead and do it. I think that kind of confidence is what has allowed me to enter into like 5Ks, 10Ks, like doing things that like I honestly on paper probably shouldn't be doing, but you learn a lot just by being in those environments. And I think pushing yourself, assuming you can afford it. So
do you think what gives you your edge in the game is that sustainable? Because again, a lot of guys, really top players, have come on here. We've heard Chess is okay, leave to go do his investment stuff. We've heard Yuta saying he's transitioning out on the ETR pod. Like, these are very highly regarded, successful players who are saying, hey, like my edges are drying up. For you, it almost sounds like you're just getting going, that you're saying, hey, I'm ready to settle in to this long professional DFS career.
You know, let me answer that for you. Sorry, Ryan, but like there, any edge can go away. And so his is, it's the same as anyone else's, really. Like, it's just one, if there's enough people who can beat the rake and put solid lineups in, then you can't win. So like, it doesn't matter how, if you're doing it Nerdy Tenor's way or the way Ryan's doing it or the way Travis is doing it. Like, eventually your edge can be dried up no matter what you're fucking doing. If there was no rake, it could last a hell of a lot longer in theory, but like, cause like, you know, if you're grinding the tape or whatever, and you're using these qualitative measures to do your lineups, there's no reason that can't be factored in the market somehow, or it doesn't matter. Like the market gets so accurate that there's just not enough edge there anymore for you to beat the rake. And I'm not saying that he's screwed, or I'm saying we're all kind of screwed in a sense. So however long it lasts, it's going to last, but like your edge, no matter what you do, can go away.
Yeah. I have been worried about that a little bit. I would say, given that this is the first year I've had some crazy success, I have consistently won at NBA to a degree. I think it's just accepting that I might have years where I'm break even or even slightly red, and then I can have some big boom years. Like, I think I agree with you. Like, most people that I've talked to think that the games could change within the next like 3 to 5 years in terms of like contest size and all that. Both of my FanDuel DraftKings reps, they kind of say the same thing. DraftKings seems a little more optimistic, but I would say in general, like, I have noticed how tight it gets. For whatever reason, like, I've still been able to win at basketball over the last 3 years. Whether that returns me a 2% ROI or a 20 or a 50, I think that's to be seen. But I would agree with you. I think there are inevitably going to be months where I'm red because of it. Because of the market.
Do you think, like, you know, again, a lot of these guys who, you know, have had success at DFS, I get the impression they could have success at a lot of things, you know, is applying kind of their problem solving, their puzzle piecing, you know, skills to different markets, whether that's peer-to-peer, whether that's the stock market or whatever. Do you consider yourself that way? Or do you think you just have this like really unique feel for DFS specifically, or do you find yourself looking for different games, different edges in other areas outside of DFS?
I think I love DFS so much. I think that's part of the reason. Like, I think passion in something, if you're really just constantly thinking about something, you're inevitably going to find edges over like a pure quant just plugging in their model to get their 5% ROI. Like, I think I will pick up on things. I don't like the stock market as much, and I know that that's pretty equivalent to DFS. Like, I don't find day trading as nearly interesting. I don't find the topics that, like, the fact that Taiwan manufactures 40% of the semiconductors that China uses, like, that just bores the hell out of me. Like, I don't care to trade based off of information in, you know, random scenarios like that or whatnot. I think it really is the game itself. I've always just been super obsessed with DFS, and I think I could apply it to some things. I think it's more just a work ethic thing from there, though.
You mentioned to Pete in when you DM'd him about, and we might have touched on this, but I want to bring it up again. You said the dichotomy between age ranges. So like mm-hmm. old geezers like me and a lot of guys who came over from poker, what were you getting at there?
I think it's a good time to get into DFS from the standpoint of you're already seeing Osmos scale back his volume. You're seeing guys like Yoda saying, I have maybe 3 to 5 left. You have a range of guys in their mid to late 30s that are probably going to decide to leave in the next few years. And from what I've gathered internally, there's enough guys still coming in, like myself. I think a new generation is going to kind of come in. I don't know. That's just a gauge. I don't know how long people tend to play for, at least at the high volume, but I do think we're at the end of the cycle. If you look, like, I'm the youngest guy at most of the live finals by like 7 to 8 years. I have one close buddy who's like 29, 30, and he's kind of, we met in Miami in 2020. And like, I'd say we're kind of the young guys coming up kind of thing.
What's his username?
I don't. He's Taco Bella's Bay, RS Bakla. Okay. He's my good buddy, Romneek. And we're the youngest guys at these events by a good majority. So I think if you're starting to scale up, it's actually a good time to get into it, assuming enough people drop off. That's where I don't think the market's going to be a negative.
I hear Wait, all that, and I think those are all red flags to stay far, far away. Like, you don't, one, you generally don't want young people because young people don't have any money. So the way they're playing DFS is by being good. And that was the same thing in poker. Like, all these young guys came in against the old geezers, and it wasn't good for the average player. It's because all these young guys are playing. They don't have jobs. They have more free time. They could study more. They're hungrier. And the reason the old guys are leaving is because it's getting harder.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of the natural ecosystem. It, almost like I have a buddy that plays on the Korn Ferry Tour in golf, and I talk to him all the time. And like, just him talking to pros and who he knows, it, like, they say the same thing every year. Like, it gets harder and harder. There's this new phenom that comes in, and yada yada. And that's more like skill, like physicality based and whatnot. But like, to the same point, like, yeah, if you have more time to dedicate, I'm not even saying I'm working 60 hours a week on it, but I have the ability to, I think, do things that others don't. And that's initially why I wanted to get into this.
The one thing I'd push back, though, like, when we do the poker comparison, is the young guys who were coming in were using different tools than the old guys. I mean, they turned into these GTO crushers who were using solvers and just like knew the game inside and out because of like literal advancements in like technology and stuff and what you could do with poker. I mean, Brian's giving a smirk, but I'm saying you aren't necessarily like spinning up your own like technology that like the old guard isn't doing. Like, guys like Nerdy and Brian, who are older than you, it sounds like are using far more advanced systems than you. So what's the difference then in the age? Just an energy or stamina thing? I guess that's where I don't see it necessarily.
I think your poker analogy is a little off though, Pete. Like, because when we first were playing in 2005, 2006, 2007, sure, we used poker tracker HUDs a little bit, but mainly the edge was we played a billion hands online compared to guys who would play, you know, 100,000 hands their entire life. So we had the time to play 8 hours a day because we were young. And so that's not, we weren't using solvers. We weren't using any of that stuff. And they were still crushing 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006. ESPN kind of made them look like they were these idiots for a while, but eventually they caught on.
Like, well, what's still not answering my question. It's for, I'm trying to figure out the DFS equivalent. It's just that the young guys have more time.
That's important.
I would say so. I mean, I'm not even saying that I'm benefiting from the more time because I'm not spending that time, but I just think in general, like when you've done something for 10 plus years, you get a little jaded. And I feel like the love of the game probably goes away a little bit. Like I still love waking up every day and looking at like just the pricing and seeing the little fluctuation. And like, it still is just like, it's so green to me. I think like my natural passion for it and just like the mental energy I put into it is probably stronger than the average guy that's been doing it for 12 years and is clicking a button to press optimize. Like you have to be like at your computer, like ready to go for 4 or 5 hours playing NBA DFS. Football is a little different. You have more time you can consume during the week, but like basketball in particular, like you got to be locked in. Like I have to make a decision sometimes within 5 minutes, and the hours that I've spent knowing where to readjust and recalibrate the equation. Like, I think there is just a mental energy to that.
The thing is though, I feel like you might be underselling how much time you spent, because you said you go on these 3 hour walks where you're messing with the combos. You said another 2 hours at your computer before lock, and then another 4 hours like throughout the games and stuff. I'm sure there's some overlap with the time there, but you might be spending more time than you maybe think, right?
You might be right. I mean, yeah, like the games itself is like, what, 4 p.m. to like 9:30. That's 5.5 hours. And then, okay, yeah, I could be spending about 11 hours a day on the normal day. No, that's true.
And now we're getting closer to chess is okay. And that's why I just felt there was a little disconnect there, because it is sounding like my advantage is what Travis here calls the competitive stamina, that you're putting it, you're outworking people with pure time and energy and stamina. And that's why there's just like a slight disconnect with saying, oh, it's just a couple of hours. It's no big deal. But my edge is outworking people. You see what I'm saying?
That's a good point. Yeah. No, that's very true.
I will also say clicking a button is.
Sorry.
Davis turned 15 today. Happy birthday, Davis.
Talk about a guy who's a young gun. Who is old school when it comes to competitive
15.
Stamina.
He's doing pretty well for 15. let's all admit that right now. Yeah. What was I saying? The click a button, like, you know, Nerdy Tenor's code just gets better. It doesn't get worse. And he puts lots of time into it for that button click. And, you know, the older he gets and the more he puts into that code, just the better it gets. Now, if you just want to like talk about 2016, 17 days where people, you just used Fantasy Cruncher or something. Sure. Yeah. You can't do that anymore. You can't just put in decent projections, click a button, put some uniques and randomness on there and make money. You could do that in 2016, 2017, but they're doing a lot more than just clicking the optimize button. Some of these guys.
No, that's fair. And I kind of avoid, like, I don't ever MME outside of NFL Showdown. I'm very strictly in the single entry streets. I think for part of that reason, like, I know I can't beat you guys on that. If there's a contest outside of 1,000 entries, like, I'm not playing it. So I think that is too, where like contest selection, like, I also would rather just risk slightly more to know that if I do have a little bit of an edge, or if I can play strong for a period of time, like, I'd rather be able to make 10 or 20K playing two guys. Obviously everybody would, but like, I'm willing to risk more capital to do that just because I think that's more advantageous for my strategy and where I'm at. And I don't think the swings are like, I've MME'd a handful of times before. And like, if you get it wrong, like you lose at least like, I don't know, Brian, you'd know this much better than me, but you're going to lose 50, 60, 70% on the nights you're off, right?
Thank you for acknowledging my losing. Yes. I will lose that. Yes. It's true.
No, I've gotten just completely dusted on nights where I've lost like 80-90%, and I'm like, well, fuck, like I just burned money.
I've bageled entire 150s.
I don't even know, like, that's probably the right strategy though. Like, you're probably supposed to dud out like that, but don't you go on like massive swings with it though, like the point where you might just be doing the same amount of swings with higher stakes.
Yeah, it's like they say PLO is no limit hold 'em on steroids for bankroll management. DFS GPP is like PLO on meth, on fucking crack cocaine or something. It's just insane, these swings.
I do want to shout out H in the chat. Says, I'm 24 and qualified for my first live final, the FanDuel World Football, I believe that is. Feel like I'm going to be the youngest dude there by a mile. So we do have another 24. So Ryan, if you're looking for someone to rip some shots and stay out till 4 a.m. at this live final, I just found your guy.
I appreciate that. My FanDuel rep is like 2 years younger than me. And we showed up in Miami, and I mean, man, this guy just like drank us under the table. It was like the funniest series of like 3 days. We went to like Live Story 11. We were out till like 9 a.m. and then we had to get on a yacht like the next morning. Like, it's funny. The dichotomy is really funny between like the guys that work at the companies and then the guys going out. It's an interesting world, to say the least.
I thought young people don't drink anymore, Pete.
Oh yeah, the new, but not DFS party bros. Those guys still drink. Because Ryan, where do you fall in that? Because there, I know what Brian's referencing, and it's this new, you know, the holistic approach to everything you do, you know, exercise, your diet, and all of this stuff. Like, how is your lifestyle relative to DFS? Because I know some of the poker guys have leaned into that more. You see the like Jason Koons of the world who are just like so regimented with their health and their diet. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, I feel like I always gain a little bit of weight once football season comes around, and then basketball, like double ending both. I do the cutting, the bulking, lifting weights 5-6 days a week. I wasn't for the last like handful of months with my job, because I was in the office at 6 a.m. every day mocking East Coast hours. I'm in SF, so San Francisco, so I kind of got out of that. But yeah, I very much do like care about that stuff, and I feel like it does help when you're mentally grinding like crazy and losing money a lot, winning some money. Like, you're mentally just like, you know, you're kind of going through it. It does help when you're like taking care of your body a lot, because it's easy to get buried in the stress of this.
One thing we always ask, you know, some of our new guests who people aren't as familiar with, who are the DFS players you respect the most? Who do you think are the top of their game right now that you see, you know, week in, week out?
Yeah, because I'm primarily focused on basketball, I'm not just saying this because I can tell he's in the comments, but Petty is such a phenomenal player. I've tried to study his play quite a bit and pick up some things. I think Yoda is overall like just one of the best tournament players, and looking at kind of the variance of his plays versus the market has helped me quite a bit. Chipotle is killer in football. I mean, all those guys that is listed are much better players than me in probably every sport, but I think Petty in basketball in particular, Yoda overall, and then probably Chipotle in football.
Yeah, I think I've asked questions, Travis, but he doesn't play like I play. So he doesn't make his own projections. He doesn't use any software. No sims. You don't even use an optimizer, do you?
I use FC if I go over one lineup, if I go five or more.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I'm not going to sit there and watch NBA games all day, Travis. You're a sicko, and I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
If I was 27, I would have.
Yeah. What, So what motivated you to reach out and come on the show other than having a really good excuse to leave your job?
I listened to Lowell's like every week when I was first starting out, and we probably didn't get into like everything, but I feel like I had just a really wild ride. Initially, just like my first 2 years, just like really struggling. It was not easy mentally. It was a lot. And then this past year, like I just never expected to make this kind of money so quickly. In like, I feel like 3 years isn't a long time to be doing something to make the kind of money that I did. And I don't know. I just wanted to say thanks and like, I don't know, kind of contribute to the ecosystem, because I feel like I'm on borrowed time in some ways. Like I don't know. I just feel like I'm just very happy with how far I've come, and kind of wanted to put some back.
Well, following up on that, why don't you give the people one juicy tip that might cost you a little EV, but do you got one thing you can tell to give back to the community?
One simple trick on how you too could quit your job to become a DFS pro, something along those lines, Ryan.
Yeah,
I'm divesting some of my money to try and make passive income. So don't put it solely on that, because I'll tell you, the swings are pretty excruciating when it's 75-80% of your net worth going into this. Don't do that. Ideally, have more money than I had starting out, but I would say you got to watch the games. That's helped me the most. Seeing how the player profiles interact with the data alone, I think, is irrelevant. You got to understand why something happens. Rotations, like knowing them like the back of your head, is very important in understanding where it can change.
We can close on this, and Davis abbreviating net worth as NW is tilting me so much right now. But how much of your net worth is it Bitcoin or other crypto?
I have never invested in crypto or Bitcoin. I have enough volatility with DFS. I don't need any more.
Okay.
I bought T-bills. That my level of risk outside of DFS is very little, but my level of risk in the amount of money I put into DFS is very high. So
interesting. All right. Yeah. Lots of conviction there. If people want a little bit more Ryan in their life, obviously they can battle you in the DFS streets. Is there anywhere you want people to follow you on Twitter? Do you have an investment, you know, hedge fund that you want to direct us to here on the side? What can we do for you?
No, I appreciate it. I think I have 4 Twitter followers, and I follow like 150 people. I've never tweeted. Okay.
Did you post your toasted?
My what?
Your toasted? It doesn't matter.
Sorry, I don't even know.
It's the thing we were talking about at the top of the show. It reveals who looks at your Twitter page. I'm sure I've looked at yours more than any other person in your life, according to Toasted.
Yeah.
Got it. No, sorry. I was doing my hair before. I wanted to look pretty for the show.
Wow. Yeah, no, it does look nice. Thank you. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Always fun to hear from someone new who's very underexposed, at least in the DFS media landscape. So appreciate you sharing and letting us kind of needle you a bit about your stuff. This was a fun show.
Yeah, let me also say I love this in DFS gambling and just in life in general, that people could find different angles to make a living. And you know, yours is definitely not kind of the standard way that people mostly want to be, I think, GPP maxers. But there's a whole bunch of ways you can make money in DFS still. I don't know for how long, but still. So it's cool when someone figures out a niche for themselves, and even if it's just like a business or anything like that, but especially in our world. So congrats.
Yeah, congrats.
No, thanks,
man.
Guys.
Living the dream, buy some Bitcoin here so Davis doesn't lose it in the chat. I want everyone to know out there, I'm not looking at your Twitter page, no matter what they say. Brian and I are here every single Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. If you, like Ryan, have some secrets to share, have been lurking beneath the surface in the DFS landscape, feel free to reach out. We'd love to talk, love to hear more about what you guys are up to. Subscribe to the channel if you're not, so you get notified when we go live, all that good stuff. So for Ryan, for Brick, I'm Pete. We'll see you guys next Thursday. Peace.
there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.